Welcome to Call Forder Connect, the podcast where a call can make all the difference in someone's life. I'm Kim Clyden, and each week we'll explore something beautifully simple but profoundly powerful, picking up the phone and calling four or more people. Four real conversations, four chances to remind someone they matter. This movement was created by Charles and Tracy Alder, who've spent decades supporting Australians through fire, flood, drought, and just as devastating, silence. Because loneliness isn't just a feeling. It's a quiet crisis, chipping away at our mental health, fueling anxiety and depression, making people feel like they don't belong. Left unchecked, it can become life-threatening. Together, we can break the cycle of isolation, remind our friends and loved ones they're seen, valued, and never alone. In each episode, we'll hear stories from people making connection a habit. Community leaders, everyday Aussies, and voices from around the world who are proving that something small can have a massive impact. So let's get into it, because the world doesn't need more noise. It needs more human connection. This podcast is recorded for educational and inspirational purposes only. The views expressed are those of the host and guest and do not constitute professional advice. We make no representations or warranties regarding the accuracy or completeness of the content. Please seek your own independent assessment from a qualified professional. Behind the stoic faces of rural and regional Australia, many are fighting silent battles against isolation, financial pressure, and deteriorating mental health. Something our guest today knows well and says equally affects people in our cities. Warren Davies, known as the Unbreakable Farmer, has lived that story. A speaker, mental health advocate, husband, and father of five, Warren has faced the harsh reality of farming, from droughts and debt to the emotional toll of uncertainty. But his story began long before the farm. As a young boy, Warren moved from the suburbs of Melbourne to country Victoria, where he found both freedom and struggle. Bullying at school and a teacher's public humiliation left lasting scars on his confidence. Warren discovered that strength doesn't come from silence, it comes from connection. Today, he travels across Australia sharing a message that's as honest as it is urgent. Mental well-being in communities can no longer be ignored. Warren, it's so good to have you with me. How did your experience as a young boy shape who you are today?
Growing up in I suppose, when you look at it in small business, there's a lot of challenges. You know, we never moved to the farm until I was a little bit older, but Dad was always had businesses. And growing up, I was always exposed to the challenges of ups and downs, but never really understood the full ramifications of those until I faced my own challenges on my own farm and in my own business, which was, had massive impacts on my own mental health and well-being, and probably those around me. You know, now looking back in hindsight, for me struggling so much, that definitely had impacts on the people that were closest to me, the ones that are, you know, my immediate family. They would have seen that they've traveled the journey, to the fact that, you know, doing what I do now as a speaker, my wife's only probably seen me do a full presentation only a couple of times because she lived that story. She knows that story. But growing up, there was probably a number of things that I've acknowledged and realized how important they were growing up. Is we did move around a little bit growing up, and I never had connection to community, which was really important, but also never really acknowledged or understood some really big things in my life, which everyone goes through, but the impact that they had on my mental health. And they were, you know, my grandfather's dying within 4 months of each other when I was seven, and also being bullied at school, something that I didn't really understand the full ramifications of until later on when, you know, I started facing some challenges as an adult, particularly on the farm.
How did you deal with those challenges at the time, and what sort of response or tools did your parents give you to manage bullying?
Well, it was one of the things that it formed from a really young age, like grade three when I was seven, underlying theme to my story about not reaching out for help, doing that typical bloke thing, I suppose, and being stoic and resilient and, you know, not asking for help because you didn't want to. And even as that young boy, I never really talked about the impact that was having. I just got on with it and just accepted that it was part of life. And one of my coping mechanisms, although I had a couple of coping mechanisms there, was either become invisible and, you know, just fade into the background and then try and deal with it that way, or try and fight back. And, you know, particularly in the sporting field, I thought if I could make sporting teams at my school, that would be make me feel more accepted. And I never achieved that either. But something that I've realized by unpacking my story a little bit is that part of, you know, your story, your backstory in everyone's life, there'll be moments in time like that. And I use, particularly around that sporting thing, because I'm, you know, I come from Victoria, I'm an AFL nut, I love sport. I use that story, I weaponize that story to, you know, bully myself basically, and use that as a bullying technique for myself, you know, that, you know, you're not good enough. Whenever I hit a stressful situation, then moving forward, you know, you're never good enough, you're not smart enough, you're never going to make it, all those things. And so whenever I hit stressful events, that was one of the weapons I used against myself, was the bullying from back in an early age. And that's something that, you know, when you recognize these things, when you unpack your story, and that's part of the journey of me transitioning from being a farmer to a speaker, I did those activities and maybe realized some things about myself that I knew but now understand better, and how that impacted my decision making and my behaviors growing up.
Given that, you know, you decided just to get on with it and try not to be bothered by it, how did it actually make you feel? What did you learn about that little boy in you?
Now I know, you know, and hindsight's a really wonderful thing. And, you know, that whole saying, I can tell people this till the cows come home now, but you can't put an old head on young shoulders, basically, but you've got to learn some of these things yourself. But it made you feel terrible. Like, I always felt alone and isolated, which was, you know, and lonely. Always looked at myself as not being enough or good enough, or, you know, which is really sad when you think about it. And I still deal with some of those things now. I've just got better tools in my toolbox to be able to help me navigate that journey. But, you know, I often, you know, say as a speaker, I've got a couple of really big techniques that I use now, because sometimes, even though I've been doing this for 10 years now, I still have the same feeling at every speaking gig, whether I've done it five times this week or one time, or I walk in and instantly my self-talk is saying, are they going to listen? Are they going to resonate? Am I going to be any good? All these things. So I have strategies to help me get past my first 5 minutes of every presentation. So once I get past that, then my passion and my mission overtakes my anxiety of thinking, you know, whether they're going to like me. So growing up now, looking back at it, you know, there's things I always jokingly say, as I said, being an AFL nut, if I knew what I know now about myself, I would have played AFL football, because I would have been able to push all those things to the side. You know, you're not good enough. And so it did have a massive impact on some of the decisions that I made and how I dealt with situations, and obviously my behaviors that were attached to that.
Anxiety is a big part of our mental health. However, it's not everything. What role do you think the loneliness and that impact of, you know, feeling ostracized and isolated has had on your mental health journey?
One of my big things that I talk about now is about communication and connection, and that they're so important. And, you know, they're my key things. I've got three key, I suppose, messages that I share with every audience that I speak in front of, and they're communication, connection, and seeking help. They're the three things that you've got to do. And not communicating with people just exacerbated my problem, and then isolating yourself and not connecting with people, or not even, you know, communicating, connecting with the people that are close to you and let them know how you're feeling. And it's something, you know, people can't support you if they don't know how you feel. So if you're not communicating with the people around you, look, I'm struggling here and I need some help. Well, they're not mind readers. And if you're not exhibiting all the major signs, or they haven't got the confidence or courage to start that conversation with you, they're not. And that's what happened to me. So I just withdrew, held all that stuff inside, which doesn't help with certain emotions like anger and frustration and, you know, your feelings that, you know, when you start bottling stuff inside, and eventually at some stage there's got to be a pressure release, got to let some of that steam off, and that's where some of your decision making and behaviors can be impacted by how you're feeling. And if you're not communicating that, well, then that's gonna eventually bubble out somewhere.
You talked about stoicism earlier, and I can tell you it's more or less an Australian trait, and it's not just restricted to men. I mean, I was raised to big girls don't cry and you'll be right, you know, get on with it and pull your socks up, all of those attitudes. So how do you think that she'll be right, tough as nails stuff actually affects us in general as a nation?
So I've got three key words that encapsulated my farming journey, and they were resilience, persistence, and determination. I've got a really fractured relationship with resilience. That's a different F word, but we'll use fractured today. And so resilience to me, particularly after the last 6 years of working in a disaster recovery space, is like someone comes into your community or enters your life, pats you on the back and says, geez, you're suffering really well, keep doing what you're doing, but leaves you with no tools to be able to move forward. So I talk more now about building capacity, leaving those tools or start filling your toolbox. And yes, the next drama or challenge or, you know, disaster will happen in your life. And yes, it's going to be a shock, but you're going to already have tools in your toolbox. And then once again, you start building some more tools from that. And then all of a sudden, you've got this really big, full, robust toolbox full of tools that help you combat any challenge that you face. So resilience is more like that pat on the back. Or for me, resilience is not so much a character trait. It's just an action born out of lack of other options. You know, and that was me. And I realized now, you know, I did what I was meant to do as a farmer. I faced a flood and I picked myself up and I dusted myself off. I faced a family bust up on our farm and did what I was told as a bloke and a farmer. And that's be, you know, tough and stoic and pick yourself up, dust yourself off, and then entered a drought, which, you know, had built into my business plan and thought would only last for 3 years. But as we moved into the sixth and seventh year of that drought, I was broken. But every day I picked myself up and dusted myself off, and then had the lowest of low moments where I thought it was better off not being here. And the same thing, I picked myself up and dusted myself off. But I now realize that if you haven't got a robust toolbox of tools, that resilience can be really detrimental to your mental health, because eventually you're going to run out of dust. You know, you're not going to run out of dust to dust off yourself. So you need to start these tools in your toolbox, because capacity comes before resilience. So I've got as I said, a really fractured relationship with resilience, and it is, but it's about building that toolbox of tools that works for you, that you can lean on when things start falling apart.
You have children of your own. So how has your story and your experience improved their life?
That's a really good question, because I get asked a fair bit, like, would you, you know, being through the dramas that I went through on my farm, would you ever farm again? And I said, yeah, at the drop of a hat, if I had the money to do it, because we lost everything when we lost our farm. And would you change anything? And I said, no, I wouldn't, because we've got five kids and our journey has created, and I use that word even though I've got that relationship with it, very resilient, strong, hardworking, great work ethics, kind, compassionate, you name it, keep throwing those words at them. And we've got five kids that have all got those traits, and we get told that every day, and we get told that we've done a good job as parents. But I don't think that's nor necessarily the case. It's that we didn't, particularly our older kids, never hid anything from them when we were losing the farm. This is the facts and this is what's happening. And that built some real strength and capacity within our kids to be able to, you know, face some challenges head on, you know. And that doesn't mean that you have your back, every day's a good day. You can still have your challenges, but I think we've built really strong, resilient people that are, you know, held highly in the community, all that sort of stuff. So it really shaped who they were, particularly our oldest son, because he's a professional musician and he used to come home when he was at uni for his Christmas break, and he'd milk cows with me. And I know for a fact that every time he went back to uni after a summer of milking cows, he practiced a lot harder so he'd never have to milk cows again. I know that he just wanted to be a musician. So it made him work a lot harder to pursue the goals that he wanted to achieve. And he knows that he didn't want to milk cows every day of his life, that's for sure.
Not getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning, I understand that. It's not for everyone, is it?
No, that's it. It's not.
Now, you don't just go into rural communities. You also speak with corporates. What do you think is the similarity, I suppose, between those rural people and the urban counterparts?
There is a divide. That's pretty clear and well documented. There is a bit of a divide between city and country. But when it comes to storytelling and telling your story, you know, I've done some work in the electrical industry, in the building industry, like lots of different industries. And I always, with myself, think, oh, why the hell have they got me here? And what are these people going to get out of a farmer, you know, or an ex-farmer standing up the front talking to them? But their stories are so similar. And the bottom line is they're business owners, just like farmers, and they face challenges. It mightn't be a drought or a flood, but it might be something totally different. You know, they face relationship issues, they face financial issues. You know, all these things are quite similar and they have the same impact. And most people, and we talk about blokes, but it's most people then, when they're facing a challenge, they'll withdraw first and they hold it in, and then but they need an outlet or an opportunity to be able to share their story. And that's where I think my role in this mental health space comes from, and that's sharing stories and giving other people permission to share theirs.
One thing you were very strong on is the way we manage these natural disasters and go in and pat people on the back and say, you know, you're struggling really well, keep doing that. We see this up and down. I mean, I'm in Queensland and we have cyclone season, which has already started. So we experience all sorts of natural disasters, given that climate change is going to impact that and make things even worse. How do you think the Australian government or communities could be doing better in providing support for the people around them?
Another great question. So there's two parts to that. I'll go first with community, and I'm a great believer in that we should build capacity and recovery from grassroots levels up instead of top down. And that doesn't mean that you don't ask for help for top down, but that comes from a directive. Like I've seen in communities, you know, particularly after the bushfires, where people come in, and that particularly the one town in Gippsland where they lost, I think, 50 homes in one night. And basically they told the government that they wanted to take control of their recovery, because the typical response from government, which is all coming probably from the right place, but oh, we'll build you a new community centre. Well, none of them have got houses to live in, so we've got to look at that first. All these sort of things. So I think, firstly, it's got recovery and leadership has to be driven from grassroots level. That's one thing, because every community is just that little bit different, and one size fits all doesn't suit every community. So I think that's an easy fix. That problem. We just got to empower people within communities to lead that. The other issue is not so easily fixed, and that's how we fund all this stuff and how it's funded and how the funding is directed. I could give you a solution that helps after every disaster. It's something that I did after the bushfires, but there's no way known that this could ever be funded, and that's feet on the ground. People walking up driveways, putting arms around people, but We talk about, particularly in rural communities, about all the services being so stretched and that they're failing, but they're not. They're doing the best that they can under the, you know, the financial capabilities that they've got. They are stretched and all that. So to put people on the ground, that's a whole different funding, you know, viewpoint of how you could do that. And it's never going to happen. I'm a realist. That'll never happen. But that's, you know, we've got to put more funding into, you know, when people are at their lowest or stressed, you know, you can go and build the best website or produce the best pamphlets, but people aren't going to read that. You know, they're not going to pick that up and read it. They want to sit and talk and connect. And so we get back to those basic needs of humans, and that is connection and communication and feel like they're being heard and loved and all those sort of things, which you don't get from a website or a glossy brochure. So we have to work out how we can, particularly with disasters and weather-related challenges, are going to be more and more and severe if we listen to, you know, most of the commentary. We've got to work out ways how we can support people as humans more, and it's that connection part, and that's what I, you know, strive to do. Doing what I do now as a speaker, I don't say no to any community. They can be in the middle of Timbuktu, I'll go there, and there could be two people sitting listening to me, and I don't care. And it's about making sure that those people feel heard and feel connected, and they can communicate how they're feeling, and that's a really important thing. But the last point around that, and this is what I learned out of community meeting that I attended during the bushfires, is they've got to be heard. But the people that are facilitating that funding or program or whatever have got to also listen. Listen to those people. If they say this is the way they want the direction to go, they've got to listen and not just assume or put what they think they heard into their terms. So I think it's really, it comes back to empowering rural and regional communities, and not just rural and regional communities, but every community, to be to empower themselves to drive change from the grassroots level.
As you mentioned, there are differences, though, between urban and rural communities or even regional communities. And one thing stood out to me there. We have a lot of disconnection. And you mentioned between the urban spaces, they're very disconnected from the rural and regional areas who provide their textiles, food, all these types of things. What you just said is that we need people to be connected. How do you expect that to happen? I mean, you grew up in Melbourne, so you had first 15 years of your life in an urban centre. They're very different. How do you see us being able to facilitate these community builds in cities in Australia?
Yeah, and there's some of the challenges that we're facing at the moment, like around renewables, what I see on the ground around renewables and changing communities where decisions are being made outside those communities, and then the impact that they have. So I think a lot of it comes back to education, but also consultation and connection and sharing wisdom. And that's a really big thing that I talk about. It's the gold nugget in every community, and that's sharing wisdom. Everyone's traveled a journey, and we shouldn't dismiss that, whether the youngest person listening to this or the oldest person. We've all traveled a journey, and we've all picked up wisdom along the way, and we can share that, and that can create different solutions and outcomes for every challenge that we face. And so we see at the moment, once there's a divide, you're either on one side of the fence or the other, and no one wants to cross it. And we just need to educate people and facilitate that conversation where we can cross, share that wisdom and try and build a better future, because we're only here for one reason, and that's to build a better future for ourselves and our people, or our families and friends and everybody else. And we become divided, and then that causes conflict, and we don't need conflict. The world needs, we've got enough conflict in the world. We need to come together and try and build a future together. And if you look back in history, and every generation will say the same thing, oh, there was conflict and there was divide and all that sort of thing. But you look at something like the Sydney Harbour Bridge or the Snowy Scheme. If you try to achieve those things now, they'll never happen. How did they happen back then? There was a lot of it, just everyone come together, and, you know, especially the Snowy Scheme, for instance, people from all over the world who'd only, you know, half a decade before been blowing each other up, all come together and build a project in a country that they don't even belong to. So we need to be able to foster that, bringing people together. And also, it's not just the city problem, it's a country problem too. We need to educate each other on what we do and what part we play. And stuff doesn't appear on the supermarket shelves without this hard work that happens here. And we can't produce that unless you buy it, and all those sort of things. But I think if you boil that all down, it just comes down to connection and communication. And we need to be able to communicate what we do better, how we support each other, and share that wisdom and invite people to cross that divide and see how we can bring that all back together. One of the things that is obviously especially in the last couple of decades, is we've lost that connection through family, where, you know, you go back two generations, most people knew someone that lived on a farm, uncle, auntie, whatever. And before that, most people would have had a connection somewhere. That's slowly but surely disappearing, and we need to re-establish that connection.
I'm with you, and I'm all for a kinder future with collaboration. Warren Davies, it's been a pleasure getting to know you. Thank you so much for coming on the Call for to Connect podcast.
No worries. I really appreciate having the chat. Thank you.
Thank you for joining me for this powerful conversation with the unbreakable farmer, Warren Davies. Warren's story is a reminder that even the strongest among us carry invisible weight, and that connection, compassion, and community can make all the difference. If today's episode resonated with you, please share it with someone who might need to hear Warren's message. And remember, reaching out isn't a sign of weakness, it's a step towards healing. One call, one conversation, one moment of honesty can change a life. If you or someone you know is struggling, please contact your local mental health support service or Lifeline on 13 11 14. No one has to face their challenges alone. Thanks for listening to Call for to Connect. I'm Kim Clyden, and until next time, keep connecting.